This is Tessa with Premier Guitar and Uncle Ted talking about the Sonic Bombast and the fruits of Little Richard's labors, because I am a huge black Motown guitar player. No Caucasian licks allowed.
There you have it.
And that's all you need to know.
This is Tessa Jeffers with PremierGuitar.com. I'm in Chicago at the House of Blues with the one, the only, Ted Nugent.
And you want to capture this, because I'm not going to be this cute much longer, Tessa.
What happens after 8 o'clock?
This is the final stages of my adorability. And plus, boys and girls, if you want to play guitar, be very careful. Don't book 77 concerts in one summer at the age of 64, or you might end up looking like this, shattered.
Oh, you're looking pretty good today, though.
If I had a little bit of sleep, I'd be downright handsome. You're going to have to deal with the remnants of one former athletic young man. No, we've had it, and the tour. My band is so good, it's stupid. The music is so sexy and so much fun, it's indecent. Absolutely not of this planet. So I am really, really tired. But the music and the adrenaline and the spirit of my band is absolutely indefatigable.
Well, part of that, and no doubt, goes to your choice of guitars, right?
Well, no, it's actually the Birdland found me.
Tell me a little bit about it.
You know, I can't tell you a little bit about it. I'm going to have to tell you a whole lot about it. The mighty Gibson Birdland, Billy Bird, Hank Garland. They made it back in the early 50s, I think, as the history shows. But I was introduced to it for the first time when I witnessed Jimmy McCarty of Billy Lee and the Rivieras. That was the name of the band prior to changing the name to Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. I'm going to say it was 61, 62, maybe.
When you found them.
Like 1961, 62. Jimmy McCarty on Gibson Birdland through a Fender Twin Reverb amp, and Mitch Ryder banging out 12 tambourines at once, Johnny Bonanjic on the drums, Earl Elliott on bass guitar, and Joe Kubrick on rhythm guitar playing an ES-335. Do you believe I remember this stuff? But I was just, 13? And I had a Fender Duosonic, and I was playing through a Fender Bassman amp. God, I wish I had that amp right now. And when they broke into their high energy, scary, defining high energy, soulful rhythm and blues, Jimmy's guitar, which you listen on Jenny Take a Ride and a lot of the early Mitch Ryder records, and the solos and Devil with the Blue Dress, and Sakatumi, that was the name of it. And what he did on that Gibson Birdland, I was already a Lonnie Mack fan, so I knew all about deep grinding twang. Obviously, I knew Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley sounds and Duane Eddy and Dick Dale and the Deltones and the Ventures. But when Jimmy McCarty played that Birdland, it wanted to feed back and make scary noises that made the notes have a new dimension of sound. And I was too young to really understand what was going on, but I imprinted that someday I'd have to have me a Gibson Birdland. My band won the Battle of the Bands in 1963. The Lords. I've been playing since like 1955. I started when I was like 6 or 7 years old. But to see Jimmy McCarty in 1960, 61, 62, whatever it was, getting those sounds out of such an amazing looking, beautiful instrument, that it was such a new dimension of tonality and vocality that I knew someday I would have to have one. So it was only a few years later, from Lyle Gilman at the Roselle School of Music outside of Chicago, 1966, I bought my first Birdland, and obviously the rest is history.
It was really an epiphany for you, a big deal.
Well, you listen to the intro of Stranglehold or Cat Scratch Fever, or on the last record, Love Grenade, listen to the intro of the Love Grenade song, and there's a depth, there's a snarl that is unique to that arch top, that hand-carved arch top spruce wood. The spruce speaks differently than any other wood.
Well, it's sort of like a jazz-style guitar, right?
That's what they thought, but I fixed it.
So what did you do to it?
I fixed it. Yeah, it is, and it plays jazz stuff, and I break into some real pretty West Montgomery-type octaves with the real crisp bell-type tone, cleaned up real well because I just have to back down the volume, which I hate to do. Not really. I love to do that. And I can touch any zone of tonality and timbre of any guitar. And I still love my Les Pauls and I love my PRSs and I love to play everything. But the Gibson Birdland has a an identity, a statement, a soul, a tone of its own. And anybody that's really gone ahead and put the effort into discovering the capabilities of Gibson Birdland, it makes you play differently. That's why I play differently.
We post when we're coming to these interviews to our readers, and they, you know, they put questions they'd like to know, and somebody
want to know what kind of bullet should I use on a Chicago rat.
Yes, they did say that, but more importantly, they asked about how you manage the feedback on a hollow body like that.
I don't. That was the intrigue. That was the attraction. Is that at my volume, which is why you're sitting on my right side, because I wore an earplug in this ear literally from like 1963 through the year 2000. I've always worn an earplug in this ear. But then I just started really turning the volume down because the Birdland's threshold for feedback is really low. I mean, it'll start feeding back at a ridiculously quiet level because it's hollow body and it's just the way the spruce works. But it's not about managing it, it's about succumbing to it and letting the big dogs run. So when it starts to feedback by placing your body, people think I'm the greatest dancer in the world, but I'm not. I'm just repositioning my body because certain notes and certain chords will feedback differently based on the way you position your body and the location of your body in relationship to the amplifier and the speakers, which is why we spend a lot of time in the old days. Now it's just, I already know where everything goes. But tonight, for example, we're playing Journey to the Center of the Mind, the Amboy Duke song, with the original singer, John Brake. And when that guitar solo starts, it's that dissonant semitone feedback note that I think is the coolest note in the world. In fact, Paul Schaefer of Letterman's band, when I jammed with those guys, he said it was his favorite note on any instrument in the history of the world because it's such a semitone that never really reaches a sound before it falls back down into the chord change. So I have to position myself on stage in a very specific location for those feedback notes to happen. And it's a challenge every night, you know.
So on that song, which Birdland would you play?
That was a 1966 Florentine Blonde, I do believe. In fact, I know it was. But because I'm such a utilitarian, a pragmatist, that when I crushed that guitar, it never got its voice back. So when it came time to make a donation to this Hard Rock Cafe in London, like an idiot, I gave it to him. What, would you please just shoot me? So that beautiful original Birdland of mine is sitting somewhere.
You want someone to shoot you?
For giving that guitar away, I should shoot myself. But I wouldn't because I have so much fun ahead of me.
Yes, you do. You have a lot of Birdlands that we just looked at them downstairs. What would you say is your number one, or can you just not choose one?
You really can't. It's like choosing your favorite kid or your favorite song or my favorite shotgun. They all serve those special purposes. I love every Birdland I fondle. A lot of guys on my talk back on my website, I mean a lot of guys, like a dozen, have purchased Birdlands because they're intrigued by the Birdland statement. Uncle Ted reeks from them. And every time I fondled one of their Birdlands, it's a pure joy. So I love them all. Now, I do use the same black one, which I think is a 64, on Stranglehold and Cat Scratch Fever every night, just because it has a certain mid-snarl to it that sounds exactly like the original performance. And I really revere my original spontaneous recordings and statements on my guitars, so I want to reproduce them perfectly every night. And I do.
Of course you do. So the specs on that for the pickups, are those the original pickups?
No, they're not, because I sweat like a beast. In fact, just now, I don't just piss like a racehorse. I piss like a racehorse with a sperm whale dick. So my point is that I really go over the top, and I work. I learned everything from James Brown and the hardest working men in show business.
Does it get better than that?
It doesn't get any better than that, except my band. God rest in peace, James Brown, but my band is as tight as the Famous Flames. That being said, I sweat like a pig on stage, and I destroy pickups. I literally destroy them. So I destroyed the original set, and we put in some buzz huckers or bam slammers.
Burst buckers.
That's some hardcore bucking going on there. So yeah, they are buzz buckers, and they sound awesome.
And I also saw the Great White Buffalo.
Is that a beautiful guitar?
It's really beautiful.
Did you want to fondle the buff?
We did touch it.
You did touch the buff. You got it. Can't get downwind of the buff without wanting to touch the beast.
I'll leave that to you.
Very special guitar. They're all very special. I love all my Birdlands. I think I have, 4 or 5 on the road here right now. And they're all killers. And you see in the picture, though, that's not all of them. Did you get some footage of that picture?
Oh,
because
no.
That's not all my Birdlands, but it's a good collection of the selection. In fact, there's
also... How many do you have?
I think I have 17 or 18 right now.
And you number them.
I do. I actually take... I commit one of the worst crimes known to mankind. But I think it's cute. Did you look at the
saw the engraving.
I take a wood burner. And the only reason I use a wood burner is because I couldn't get a wood chipper to work. That's why Mick Brown plays for me, because I need a wood burner, a wood chipper, and a Mick Brown. I just take a wood burner and I carve TN and a number on the back, which I think is just adorable. But the purists out there would also like to join in the shooting of Ted tonight. But it serves a purpose. It identifies them. And quite honestly, the offers I've been given for my guitars, because they have the identification as being my numbered guitars, the value is through the roof. It's nuts. And I love through the roof, and I love nuts.
Who doesn't? You play some PRS guitars in your show, right?
I do. I have a song called Fred Bear that was an emotional outrage after a great man named Fred Bear passed away, and a great friend and hero of mine. And there was a brand new prototype PRS that I just happened to have in the corner of my home. And I plugged it in, and I played this beautiful arpeggio opening that I think is very inspired by Paul's incredible guitar. It's a very playable guitar. It's like a custom rifle or a custom target handgun that is made to fit you, your natural hand-eye coordination. And there's something about a guitar that should fit you. You shouldn't adapt to the guitar. Ultimately, you should get the neck that feels good immediately and go for the instrument that feels the best. It's like guns, guitars, and women. You want to get the right damn one. And sometimes you have to shop around often.
And sometimes not.
No, never sometimes not. Would you tell her? No, you never find him first. If you do, you blow it in the end anyhow. Paul constantly rotates them with me and says, here, try one of these.
They're pretty.
They're not only pretty, but they're all supremely playable. Anything that has PRS on it is immediately lovable by any guitar player. Everybody who grabs a PRS guitar will tell you that the minute they slink their hands around them, that it makes you play a certain way. And so the Fred Bear song and the Little Miss Dangerous, if you play the intro of Little Miss Dangerous using the dive bomber, those songs could have only been created on a Paul Reed Smith guitar, because it inspires me to have a certain touch on the neck and play a certain way. I have some Les Pauls that are awesome. My American Flag Les Paul is one of my favorite guitars in the world to play. In fact, I play it more on stage than even my Birdlands or my PRSs. All my Les Pauls are killers. I got a 58 and a 59 to die for, and if you touch them, you will. I love all my Paul. I have a number of PRSs. They're all wonderful. I have a lot of Birdlands. I have a Super 400 12 string.
You lightened up your gauge a little bit, and I asked him why, and he said, "I don't know. It's just the way he feels. Whatever he feels, he does that."
Yeah, I can't really explain why, because there was a long time a lot of us thought that heavier strings, a la Stevie Ray Vaughan, would give you a bigger, fatter sound. But that's not necessarily true, because one of the biggest, fattest sounds known to man is Billy Gibbons, and he uses really light strings. So it has a lot to do with the amplifier and the way you touch your instrument. So I just play around and dip around off and on. And this year I went from 10 to 48s to 11 to 50s, and then now I'm 9 with the top end 46, or the low end 46. So I just play around based on, I'm a whimsical road less traveled guy. In fact, I don't travel the road less travel. I go where there are no roads that no one has ever traveled.
So you're not actually conservative.
Oh, I'm rather uppity. I would be Little Richard if I were then.
We're mentioning you used to have a Fender.
Twins, yeah.
But now you're playing PBs.
Yeah, I almost blew my head clean off with all those Fenders. I used as many as 8 Fender Twins and 8 Dual Showman Bottoms. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? What the hell was I thinking? It was just adorable. You know, birds would fly by at 100 yards and turn into poof, nothing but shrapnel flesh and feathers flying everywhere. It was just too damn loud. And so many years ago, in fact, during the damn Yankees, I went down to PV 5150s. It just was an experiment and some of their other vintage stuff. And I was playing around. It sounded awesome. So I stuck with it. And today I'm using 6505s. And I only use a couple of them and a little custom amp. And I still got a bunch of Fenders. But on stage, our volume is down but maybe 10% of what it used to be, just for health reasons. Because I can get all the sounds, the PA brings all the power and the volume that you could possibly dream of and beyond. And on stage, it's so important that we all hear each other perfectly and that I don't blow out my last good ear. So I improvise, adapt, and overcome, and it's working perfectly.
And I was looking at your pedal board, pretty small.
You know, and I don't even use them, really. I got a phase that I punch once in a while for kicks and giggles.
And a chorus delay.
Yeah, and I don't even use that.
Yeah.
I haven't stepped on it in years, but it's there.
So you're all about the tone you can get from your fingers?
That's why I use big fat cables, these great cables that go right from the guitar to the amp, so it sounds like a guitar through an amp. I really don't like the thinning out of processing with lots of pedals. Now, nothing against all those dudes out there with all those pedals. I'm sure you have wonderful sounds, but I like my sound better.
Well, did you want to play a little bit for us?
I could play a little bit for you.
That'd be awesome.
And I'll show you how Birdland feeds back, even at little quiet volumes. Tone, you get we're not loud at all in here. I mean, you can get those real pretty. Kind of tone you want. If I wanted to get an original like 1955, I can get a Chuck Berry tone. Feedback elements are just stupendous.
Are there any songs that you're really enjoying playing live?
Everyone. Every song has unlimited crazy guitar parts. I mean, they're all, every song is a killer song. I mean, we've been doing Stranglehold. Every song is so cool, I can't stand myself. If I wasn't me on stage playing, I'd be out there watching that guy.
For sure. Well, you're from Detroit. Everybody
yeah.
knows it. There's another great guitar player, Jack White. Have you met him? What do you think about him representing Detroit?
Well, God bless Jack White, a wonderful creative guy, some killer music, but in the world of guitar players, he's not even the top 20 from Detroit. I mean, to not put Jimmy McCarty, I mean, they're different planets altogether. And again, Jack's wonderful. He plays some killer licks. But compared to Jimmy McCarty, you got to be kidding me. How about Dick Wagner? How about Steve Hunter? How about Johnny Guitar Watson? How about Derek St. Holmes?
Johnny Guitar Watson, we just did a story on him.
That's my point. So, Jack, with all due respect, Jack, you're going to have to practice a little bit more to be in the same league as these guys.
He's still a little bit of a spring chicken, maybe.
That's all. He's young. He doesn't have the, you know, he doesn't know what Jimmy McCarty knows. And I'm sure he will, because he's number one, he's a Detroiter. And Jack's got a lot of soul, and he's got some wonderful statements and licks that he's created songs around. But when it comes to really overall guitar playing, even my guitar teacher, Joe Podorsik, who did a bunch of Motown stuff, Joe Podorsik isn't even listed. I was voted the number one guitar player ever from Detroit. Duh. But that Jack White, I don't know where Jack White was. I think he might have been second. But that's offensive. That's just not honest. Because if you don't, you can't list great guitar players from Detroit and not mention Dick Wagner or Steve Hunter or Jimmy McCarty. Talking about guys that have left an indelible mark in the world of music. I mean, Mark Farner, he's not exactly Detroit, but he's considered a Detroit guy. And he's a killer guitar player. Plays circles around Jack White. And again, I love you, Jack, and you play great, but compared to these other guys, it's just...
Hey, he might agree with you, too.
Oh, I'm sure he would, you know, because he's a musical guy. But it's like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, are you kidding me? Madonna? Are you kidding me? Grandmaster Flash? Why don't you just piss on Bo Diddley's grave? You got to be kidding me. ABBA? Is this an intentional gesture to offend Chuck Berry? So when you have, and again, Jack White is not an offensive statement for guitar players from Detroit, but compared to other guys, I'm sorry, we're talking apples and grenades here.
What's coming up for fans?
Well, geez, millions of things, but I got two songs right now that are a free download at tednugent.com. I Still Believe and I Love My Barbecue. And they're killer riffs and they're killer songs. They're just in demo form, so it's not like the big beast of the bass, drums, and guitar sound yet, which takes $500,000 to produce that properly. But we went in 20 minutes, at least did a demo of these two songs, and you can hear it at tednugent.com. And we're always creating new music. There's always guitars laying around every room of my home, and I pick them up every day, and I offend them.
Well, thank you so much for talking about offending them with us.
My pleasure. God bless America and God bless American music. Maybe you can tell me the last really cool guitar song from France. How about some really great guitar creativity from Germany and places like that? If it wasn't for American black creators, there would be no British music, there would be no Scorpions, there would be no nothing. So God bless Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley and Little Richard and all the masters, Gatemouth Brown, the guys that invented the coolest music in the world are all American guys, and most of them are black. So never forget where we come from.
I can't follow that.
Telling you.
Thank you, Ted. This is Tessa Jeffers for PremierGuitar.com.